Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, a look at a week with a pretty stunning, dramatic midterm election. But before we go to those results, wish I was there. A UW journalism prof says President Trump has, his words, hacked the media. Governor-elect Evers says he wants significantly talented individuals to help him in his administration. Senate Leader Fitzgerald says he wants to fix, quote, no guardrails on who serves on the Wiedek board. Attorney General-elect Call says he will seek to withdraw Wisconsin from the federal lawsuit aimed at voiding the Affordable Care Act. And finally, what did the Solidarity Singers sound like on Wednesday after the defeat of Governor Scott Walker? Wish I was there.
Trump has hacked the media system. I think he's figured out how to distract rather than direct. He's not using his powers to focus us on issues of commentary and concern. Instead, he's using it to essentially distract us at key moments. The media has not figured out how to respond to Donald Trump, and they're using their old rules and their old tools and techniques, and they're failing miserably in the process. He's completely outflanked them.
I'm also looking to staff the Evers administration with some really significantly talented people representing the diversity that the state of Wisconsin has. And we're going to pick people who will always, as we do, the three of us standing up here, put the people of Wisconsin first.
I think there's some stuff that's going to be reasonable. The one that really jumps out is WEDC. And I think it does because the way that it was originally put together, WEDC, there's not a lot of, there's no big guardrails there. And with Governor-elect Evers saying, you know, he wants to abandon WEDC and put together the old Department of Commerce, that's a concern to me because we know what the impact that WEDC has statewide.
When I take office, I will also work with Tony Evers to withdraw from the lawsuit that is seeking to invalidate the Affordable Care Act. No one in Wisconsin should be denied health insurance coverage because of a pre-existing condition. And protections for people with a pre-existing condition shouldn't be put at risk.
So, Democrat Tony Evers, mm-hmm. Superintendent of Public Instruction, knocked out Governor Walker seeking a third term. Walker conceded on Wednesday, saying, thanks to Tony Evers for his gracious comments in their phone call. I offered the full support of my staff and our cabinet as he begins a transition process. In that 1:30 a.m. speech on Wednesday, focused on solving political problems and not picking political fights. That's the overview, JR. Your initial reaction to Mr. Evers' win?
I wasn't surprised by it. Going into it, there were signs there that there was an opportunity for Evers to win. What was interesting to me is the map and how it looked. Go back to 2014. Mary Burke won 16 counties and lost by 6 points statewide. Tony Evers won 19 counties, won by 1.2 points.
Right.
It just showed the changing map in Wisconsin, and what we're seeing is we are a reflection of the nation. We are becoming an urban, suburban versus rural state. Now, I don't know how it's going to play out going forward, if Republicans can fix their issues with the suburbs and Dems theirs with the rural areas, but that's something to watch as it impacts a lot of things, not just statewide races, but the maps we're going to have the next time redistricting, probably drawn by the courts, all these things, the way we look, to how we vote is changing in Wisconsin.
It is. It is. Okay, now let's listen to a little bit of Mr. Evers' winning speech offered about 1:30 Wednesday morning at the Orpheum Theater a few blocks away on State Street. Let's listen to how Mr. Evers claimed victory.
I'm proud to say we ran a positive campaign focused on the issues that matter most. Better schools, better roads, more affordable health care that includes protections for pre-existing conditions. Our priority has always been what's for the people of the state of Wisconsin. And I can promise you this. I'll be focused on solving problems, not picking political fights. I will never make promises I cannot keep, and I will always work for you.
So he said there are three major issues, as he's been saying in the campaign, healthcare and education, mm-hmm. and go ahead, help me with the third one.
Transportation,
right. Do you think those were the three most telling issues against Governor Walker?
Those were the things that we saw over and over again in the ads. So it's clear that Democrats had polling that showed that these were potent things. But if you look at the nuance of the messages, especially from the Democratic Governors Association and Evers' campaign as well, it was about Walker being out for himself. This is a guy who had put his own political ambition ahead of the state's best interest. Mm-hmm. He ran for president, kind of reminding people they didn't like that about him. It played into a Walker fatigue factor. Now, I don't know how much of that resulted in what happened on Tuesday. But you have to look at it. You know, Walker tried this rehabilitation tour, basically, after he ran for president, went around the state, did these kind of closed-door meetings with people, produced a budget, right, in 17 that seemed to address all of the vulnerabilities that he had,
yeah.
ran as the education governor after what he'd done with education funding in Act 10 before, talked about the record amount of money in education. He did all these things to try and fix what was wrong and then have this third... What would be a third term would be like his completion of that rehabilitation tour. But I just get the impression talking to people that voters were kind of had this Walker fatigue of, okay, wait a second, you've had 8 years. Why don't you do it the first 8 years, what you're talking about doing now?
Yeah.
Then you add in the Trump thing with what's going nationally. And if you look at the map, like Trump went to Marathon County, right, Mosinee. Republicans hit 60-some percent. Walker did in Marathon County. I would not imagine that 12 years ago. If you told me we're holding at 67% or what it was in Marathon County, I would have been like shocked. Again, chose the changing map. But I don't know how much Trump helped or hurt Walker, but there's just something going on that there just wasn't that mojo for a third term.
Well, and I want to attribute a theory to Larry Sabato of the University of Virginia. I could say it, but I'd be stealing it. It was Sabato who first said that this campaign for Mr. Walker felt like a fourth because you had... Mm-hmm. 2010 when he won it, then the recall, then 2014, that this felt like a very heightened playing into the voter fatigue.
Fourth time on the ballot in 8 years, and that doesn't count when he left the state to run for, you know, to lay the foundation for run for president. I mean, he actually never got to a primary or a caucus, but he was gone for a good part of 2015, so you add that on top of it,
right?
And there was, you know, that part of that fatigue factor.
And those later Franklin polls, when you talk to Republicans, did you begrudge or did you have a problem with Governor Walker running for president? And yes, they did.
And what I sense about Walker this time in talking to people is this was a different candidate Walker than I've seen before. In the past, like now, granted, in 10 and 14, he had very much pro-Republican environments, and we kind of all knew. Election night, we kind of knew mm-hmm. what was going to happen. It was pretty clear that he had an advantage. In this environment, he was running against a headwind, and you saw a Walker who was struggled to answer the pre-existing condition issue. I mean, they had, I don't know, four or five ads at least that addressed it in some way, shape, or form that obviously hurt him. There was a national discussion about health care, which obviously hurt him with that issue. Add in Tammy Baldwin's on the ballot. She won by 10 points. That had to have helped Tony Evers in some way. I mean, granted, we can have ticket splitters in Wisconsin again. That's happened again.
And we're going to mention that later.
But 10 points, that's a lot to overcome when you're talking about two of the top of ticket races.
Okay, so you had a 10% win by Senator Baldwin, but the margin in Governor Walker versus Evers, 49.6, 48.4. Just fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, let's turn, though, to the Republicans keeping a lock on the state legislature. The GOP wins the 5 seats targeted by Democrats. They win by Representative Andre Jacques in the 1st District, picked up a Democratic seat. The Republicans held seats given up by retirees. No Republican incumbent Leggy lost. The Assembly will, assuming the Vining win against Adamczyk, that'll give the Assembly 63-36 GOP margin. Only the GOP lost only one. You and I think, might have predicted the GOP was going to lose 4, 5, or 6, correct?
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about that. I mean, the surprise of the night to me
in the
was not Evers winning. It was that the truly competitive races in Wisconsin legislature were all in southeastern Wisconsin. I mean, give Evers credit. I mean, we talked about the Walker fatigue factor, but he may have been the right candidate at the time, right? People like to, or critics like to kind of dismiss as being bland or whatever, but that may have been what people wanted. He may have been the perfect candidate in this environment. He has saying that now as a challenge, and that is to work with this Republican-led legislature. And you look at the map, again, he benefited from Milwaukee and Dane counties, what they did there. But if you go out state, like, Democrats targeted Howard Markline in southwestern Wisconsin. He won by 8 or 10 points. They went after Roger Roth in the Appleton
Fox
area.
Valley.
He won by 6 or 8 points. Democrats, the only really close race that the ones they targeted was Dale Koyanga in southeastern Wisconsin.
Versus Julie Hensy.
Traditionally been a pretty Republican seat. Was 51-49, I think.
Yes.
And they had to defend Janet Buley up in northern Wisconsin, ended up winning that one 51-49. So this is part of the challenge for Democrats going forward with the map, and even when there's a rewrite. They have got concentrated pockets of strength, but how do they communicate to voters outstate and win those? Now, again, Democrats are going to talk about a rigged map. It's unfair. But in the Markline race, I'm waiting to get final numbers, but I'm going to bet you that Tony Evers and Tammy Baldwin both won Markline Senate district. If you look in the assembly races, you know, Todd Novak again was a target, again won re-election, and I'm going to bet you again that top of the ticket, Baldwin and or Evers won that assembly district. How do you explain that? That's going to be a challenge for them going forward.
Okay, and now let's turn to the reaction. What happened on Wednesday? The governor-elect in his first press conference said, "I reached out to both the Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald about bipartisan solutions to things that people are about, like roads, making sure we have good public education system and health care." And then Mr. Voss stopped in the press room and said this: "If Governor Evers wants to argue about Act 10 and all of the things that make people who eat granola and live in downtown Madison happy, that is his right. But that's not where common ground is going to be found. We're not going to turn our backs on the, his words, success we've had for the past 8 years. So Voss is throwing down that gauntlet. Then yesterday you covered the Senate Majority Caucus, the organizational caucus at which Mr. Fitzgerald was reelected. Congratulations. And he said there will be some changes that may limit the powers of adopted in this lame duck session. But, quote, Mr. Evers will have the most powerful veto pen in the nation. The idea that he's going to be able to keep the legislature in check, it would be naive to think that. Help me parse all these reactions. And at one point, Mr. Voss issued a statement giving all of us a civics lesson on the different branches of government. Mm-hmm. So all this byplay means.
First, how is Evers going to govern? What's his emphasis going to be? How is he going to work with the legislature? Can they find common ground on things? Go back and look. We have an example. 03-04 and 05-06 sessions. We had Democratic Governor Jim Doyle, Republican-controlled legislatures. If you look at the budgets that they did, Leggy sent him budgets with policy and other things, and Doyle uses veto pen to cross things out and stitch together what he wanted for education spending, move money from transportation to schools. Already hearing from Republicans this time that when they do their budget next spring or early summer, they're going to send one. They're not going to work off of Governor Evers' proposal. They'll use the current budget and work off of that, because then they can limit how much he can veto. Now, I'm not an expert on exactly how you would do this, but if you use the current budget, you can limit the powers to cross things out, right? So they might do that route. What's that going to mean? What does Evers do then? Would he threaten to veto the entire thing? Would he take a stand? And oh, by the way, Republicans who have this advantageous map right now are going to take a stand to please their base, to keep their base motivated. How's that going to play out?
Well, okay, I want to ask this good cop, bad cop question. When Tommy Thompson was elected in 1982, he was the good cop, the exuberant, you know, booster, but he had a bad cop in Mr. Clauser. Do we have any idea who the bad cop, the DOA secretary, the one... I'm going to go back to the bad cop picture, might be for Mr. Evers. Have you heard any names?
Not yet. I mean, it's all been rumors so far. He's not announced any transition team or anything along those lines. You'd expect people who worked with him at DPI, on his campaign, will be part of his administration. But that's going to be a big thing to watch, too, is how does Evers govern? There's some chatter about, okay, if you look in Wisconsin right now, the only people who've done a transition in the Democratic side are from Doyle world. Governor Jim Doyle from, you know, 03 to 11. Do they go dip into the Doyle pool, but then do you want to be Doyle 2.0? Or do you have your own kind of team, your own path, but they don't have the experience? Because, frankly, nobody else does. Nobody else has done it in a long time. Remember, Jim Doyle is the only Democrat until Tony Evers, who's won a governor's race in Wisconsin since 1986. there's a lack of experience in that regard.
I think the single best Democratic strategist is Congressman Mark Pocan, who, excuse me, just got empowered when Democrats took over in the U.S. House. But anyway, now let's go back to Wisconsin's ticket-splitting tradition. You had top of the ticket, Democrats won, Senator Baldwin, who we'll talk about in a minute, Mr. Evers, and Lieutenant Governor Barnes, Mandela Barnes out of Milwaukee, and Attorney General Josh Kahlo, that could be subject to a recount. And then go below that, every Republican incumbent legislator won. Mm-hmm. So now Evers must negotiate on those three issues, K-12, transportation, and health care, with a Republican dominated legislature, and ticket splitting, why?
That's a good question. But I saw signs throughout the fall that was going on, because I'd hear about polling and assembly races that would and key ones that would have Baldwin up by 6 or 7 and Walker up by 4 or 5. So it was obvious it was going on. And if you look at like the Senate race, it was much different than the gubernatorial race, because of the Senate race, Tammy Baldwin, from the end of, right after 2012 election through the middle of October, she raised like $31 million. Leah Vukmir, between getting in September of 2017 and the middle of October this year, raised $5 million. There wasn't a flood of independent money coming to Wisconsin to help Leah Vukmir. Tammy Baldwin had the bigger megaphone, and she used that megaphone to define Leah Vukmir, just a different race. And so independents, probably even some Republican-leaning voters, saw more of Tammy Baldwin than they saw of Leah Vukmir. That probably influenced how that vote went.
Yeah, and I want to come back to those independent spending in next week's Rewind. But before I give up on this issue, Josh Kahlo, help me understand. 81% in the Charles Franklin poll in September said they never heard of him or didn't have enough to know about him, mm-hmm. and he's the attorney general-elect. Connect those dots.
The challenge for Brad Schimmel, we talked about before, was can he carve out a unique identity, a unique brand from the generic ballot? And it turns out he couldn't. Now, there was a constitutional candidate on that race that, I can't remember how many votes. I think it would have been enough. If all those votes went to Schimmel, it would have, kind of the difference. I caution about that, though. With third-party candidates, you get a lot of true believers who are turning out to vote in that race. You can't just say, well, if they add that plus that, he would have won, okay? That said, they just basically reflected the top of the ticket. I don't mean to diminish either of them, but it's a difficult race to get attention when you have a U.S. Senate campaign with Tammy Baldwin on the air the way she was, with the governor's race sucking up the energy. It's hard to break through. Then, remember, Kahlo didn't go on the air until middle of October. It was a gamble that he took to do that. I don't know that Tuesday justifies the gamble he took. I saw people say he should have gone up earlier. But it goes to show you that these guys were basically beholden the top of the ticket, and they rode the generic ballot.
And that late call ad, this is a coin that doesn't solve crimes. This is a rape kit that could, for Schimmel to come back when saying, this is a way to honor our law officers. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I've cleared up all the backlog with the rape kits.
Now, with Kahlo, the question that I've gotten from people this week is, what kind of AG is he going to be? Is he going to be the law and order AG that Democrats had with Jim Doyle? Is he going to be more of a progressive crusader, be somewhere in the middle? Because remember this about attorneys general. Every one of them walks in the office and goes, I could do something else. I could run for governor someday, because they see the platform that they have. So what are they going to do? And I can guarantee, I've heard people that maybe bets that if Brad Schimmel had won re-election on Tuesday, that in 4 years, he'd look at running for governor. But now he didn't, so that's kind of maybe off the table. But I guess my point is, what's Josh Kahlo going to do now? He has his office. How is he going to move forward as attorney general?
Okay, now let's turn to the win by Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. My take is that she may have run the best campaign. But before we can mm-hmm. debate that, let's listen to excerpts from Senator Baldwin's victory speech, State Senator Leah Vukmir's concession speech on Tuesday night.
For us, it wasn't simply a political fight. It was a fight about doing what's right. Corporate interests spent $14 million thinking they could tell Wisconsin what to do. All of you said, not on my watch. Because they know that I don't work for them. I work for you.
We ran hard. and we ran as underdogs, and we knew that all along. We campaigned on the issues that matter, the issues that matter most to people in Wisconsin. How do we treat our veterans? How do we fix health care for everyone? How are we going to take our successes, the successes that we had and have had here in Wisconsin to Washington, and make those successes for all Americans?
You and I read national stories on how U.S. Senate Majority Leader McConnell really focused on races he thought he could win, and he did win some of those key races. Missouri, for example, okay, and Indiana. Does that mean that that McConnell and the groups that follow him and support his candidates did not go all in on Leah Vukmir?
Yes, and what's interesting is a lot of the money, Baldwin talks about the money spent against her. That money was spent pre-primary by groups trying to soften her up, and by groups that were largely funded by Dick Uihlein, who supported Kevin Nicholson. Once Vukmir won the primary, that kind of money went away. And somebody had pointed to me this week that Vukmir was the financial underdog the entire time. In the primary, she was defined by Kevin Nicholson's friends. In the general election, she was defined by Tammy Baldwin's money. And Tammy Baldwin defined her as somebody who was beholden to insurance companies rather than to patients, which undercut like one of Vukmir's strengths, that she was a nurse, you know?
She's a pediatric care nurse.
And the criticism of Vukmir that I heard was that she ran a primary election message in a general election environment that was not receptive to that message. And by that, remember her first ad, one of her first ads in the primary was her at a table with a gun and a holster on the table, you know? She ran a kind of a hitch your wagon to Trump a little bit. Why not hitch your wagon more to Walker and stress that, which she stressed in the primary, stress that one in the general election because Walker's race was close. I mean, whenever you lose, you always get second-guessed. So this is kind of the things that you hear. But the bottom line was Tammy Baldwin was able to use her resources to define Vukmir, and Vukmir could not overcome that.
Which is why I say Tammy Baldwin may have run the best race in the elections on Tuesday. Do you agree or no?
From what I've heard from people, yeah. Now the question about Baldwin's going to be, okay, you've now secured a second term. What are you going to do? Baldwin's reputation is not being a very high-profile senator. She's not very flashy on national headlines. But in here, she does great with constituent relations. She goes to small towns in Wisconsin a lot. She's in Milwaukee a lot. She does the legwork that when you see the ads attacking her, voters go, well, I kind of know her from the local paper that I see her in, you know, once every couple of months, or the local TV station. This doesn't really make a lot of sense. She's kind of built that reputation of somebody who does the work on the ground. She's not a you know, the debates prove she wasn't a dynamic speaker necessarily in public, but she's very good in these small settings, and it probably helped her.
Okay, now let's talk about the U.S. House. Let's open, of course, with Brian Stiles' win over Randy Brice. The margin was 55% to 42%. Were you surprised it was that big of a gap?
A little
too much baggage on Brice?
A little bit, but it shows the baggage Brice had and how he was flawed. Brice got attention because of the money he was able to raise.
But he was a bright, shining star here, what, 11 months ago?
Yeah, but you didn't really see, like, independent groups come in and spend millions on TV for him. Because in the pecking order, they needed 23 seats, I think it was, to flip the House.
Yes.
We're now like somewhere in the 30s, whatever it is. Like, we're still seats in California to be counted, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But they didn't need the first congressional district. So the PAC associated with House GOP leadership came in and hit Brice. That was done, I was told, because Brice had so much money. This was like an insurance policy. And it just, from what I heard, it wasn't a close race.
Okay.
In a polling, I should say.
What could have been a close race is the Cole versus Grothman in the 6th. It wasn't. I think Glenn won by 55%. Why did the Dems had hoped that would be a win for them? Why did Mr. Grothman win so handily?
I was told last week that if Cole won that race, it would mean it's a blue tsunami in ways you can't imagine, that like the governor's race would be gone, all the constitutional officers, the state Senate would flip, like it's just a blue tsunami. And it wasn't. You know, it was, looks like right now, and we're still counting votes, but looks like a slightly above average midterm election for House seats lost. It doesn't look like a blue tsunami. And if you look at President Trump's approval ratings and from exit polling, he was like, you know, 47-52 or something like that. So 47 approved, 50-52. Well, great, but they weren't horrible numbers. So, you know, it's hard to say it was a tsunami on Tuesday, and that's what Cole would have needed.
Okay, and our other six U.S. House members, Ron Kind, Gwen Moore, Jim Sensenbrenner, Sean Duffy, and Mike Gallagher, weren't seriously challenged. No surprise there?
Remember, Ron Kind didn't have an opponent 2 years ago. Donald Trump won his congressional district. Ron Kind won at 60%.
Over Mr. Toft.
So it shows you the big question about, when I read the big question about 16 was, if Ron Kind had an opponent, would he have run an aggressive campaign 2 years ago? Would he have had an infrastructure in place that would have turned out voters in western Wisconsin? Could that have possibly helped Hillary Clinton? Because everybody talks about Milwaukee and how it didn't turn out for Clinton 2 years ago. But one of the real stories is how rural Wisconsin cratered for Clinton. And maybe Kind, if he had an opponent, would have helped in some odd way, you know, having him like engaging people and going out. It shows you what that district can do for Democrats when there's a good, decent environment for them.
Okay. And before we get to your stock picks, let's note that the advisory referendums on marijuana all passed. Mm-hmm. They were kind of splintered. Do you favor medical marijuana? Do you favor recreational marijuana? More than 70% of Milwaukee, Dane, Rock voters favor recreational marijuana, and voters in 11 cities and counties, at least, maybe more, overwhelmingly voted to legalize medical marijuana. But having interviewed Republican leaders and Republican candidates, Wisconsin is not, I don't think, going to legalize recreational marijuana.
You won't be talking anytime soon, put it
I
that
agree.
Way.
Okay, now let's go to your stock picks.
So Dane County, let's talk about that map some more, all right? When I first got here in 2000, like the rule of thumb was if a Democrat hit, I think, 62% Milwaukee County, that was like the benchmark, right? That meant you're going to win statewide. It then changed. It was about like maximizing Dana Milwaukee counties and limiting your losses for Democrat in the Fox Valley. For Republicans, it was, you know, limiting Milwaukee and Dane counties, maximize the Wow counties, do well in the Fox. We saw a new map on Tuesday.
We did.
And that map is driven in part by Dane County, which has become a powerhouse for Democrats.
Evers got 220,000 votes. He won by a 3-1 margin over Walker in Dane County, 2-1 margin in Milwaukee, but go ahead, these are your stock picks.
He got more votes on Tuesday out of Dane County in a midterm election than Hillary Clinton did in a presidential year 2 years ago.
Okay.
But here's the thing to look at, all right? And Milwaukee County is no slouch itself for Democrats. But what we saw was that Walker missed his marks in the Wow counties. 4 years ago, Walker hit
Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington.
72.4% Waukesha County, 75.9% in Washington County, 70% in Ozaukee County. Had he hit those percentages this year, it would have flipped 21,000 votes and change from Evers to him. That would have made up the difference, but he didn't. Instead, he hit in Waukesha County, 66.1%, Washington, 72.2%, Ozaukee, 62.7%. What's that mean? This is the suburb problem that Republicans have in part because of Donald Trump. The question is that a blip or is that a trend? This is the second time in a row because Trump, we saw that effect a little bit 2 years ago. Now what happens? Is the kind of traditional country club Republican crowd, are they going, this is not my party anymore, it's a populous rural county and I'm not comfortable with stuff, or can they be won back? Now, Dane County, Evers, 74.7% out of Dane County. Dane County by itself provided more than enough votes to offset the entire Walker advantage in the Wow counties.
By itself?
By itself.
Okay.
If you add in Milwaukee County, it offset them losing Evers losing the 15-county Green Bay market by 75,000 votes and left still enough votes to offset the rest of the state and win by 31,000. That tells you the powerhouse these are. Now, the caveats I offer going forward. Can you keep maximizing Dane County at the level? I mean, we're talking it's near presidential level in a midterm election. Can you do that every time? Obviously, Democrats figured out Milwaukee County has to be taken care of, unlike 2 years ago when Clinton didn't inspire people. Can Democrats also fix their issue out state? They have a problem with rural voters. If you look at that county by county map, it's bluish in southwestern Wisconsin, blue across the southern, like over to Rock County and Dane. You get red in Walworth County, blue in Kenosha, blue, and there's a lot of red other than like Eau Claire County in the top three.
Just like there was a lot of red when you took the 2016 presidential vote for Trump in this state.
Mm-hmm. Like well, there's this blue island of Menominee County, which is, you know, sparsely populated. This blue island of Eau Claire. It would do well if they could find a way to do better in those rural areas. And the Fox Valley. I mean, Baldwin won three counties in the Fox Valley. Evers didn't. So the Baldwin map shows you what Dems can aspire to. The Evers map shows you what maybe the math going forward. And for Republicans, that those Wow counties, you got to worry about those going forward. Can you fix that issue?
Okay, and before we get to mixed, I just want to say that Madison, turnout, 92.9%. Okay, mixed.
So gerrymandering, so I'll tell you, my least favorite part of my job, Steve, is election night from 5 until 8:30. There is nothing to do. You've covered every story, you've made every phone call, you got to wait for the returns. My favorite part is the day after the election, because then the backstabbing begins, the jockeying for position for leadership, the going back and forth. It's like Christmas for me. This year, almost nothing.
Right.
And the Democrats, their response was, it's the maps. Everything that happened, it's the maps. Now, Republicans will say that's not the case. You can't explain everything by the maps. So that said, this is a bad map for Democrats. They couldn't take a Evers win statewide and turn it into big gains at the Assembly and Senate level. But what you cannot underestimate the importance of the Evers win is what it means for redistricting in 2021.
That's exactly right. That's what Sandy Pope Roberts told me this week.
So what we always do in Wisconsin is you're supposed to have the assembly, legislature and the governor pass a map. If they cannot, however, it goes to the courts. The courts have drawn the map more times than not in the last 100 years. Democrats' best hope is the courts to draw the maps. If they had not won the governor's office on Tuesday,
right,
it would have meant they had to go win the state Senate in 2020 to have any shot at being at the table to stop another GOP map. If they had written another GOP map, it would have encased the advantage for another decade, barring a successful lawsuit. Remember, that suit went to the Supreme Court. They kicked it back.
Kicked it back.
The court is a different composition. It's going to be difficult to overturn the maps via lawsuit.
And the Democratic pleadings are going to be this. And you saw the press release yesterday from the Fair Elections. In the vote for assembly members, Republicans got 45% of the total cast for all state assembly members, yet they will have 65%, 63% in the assembly.
Now, look at that map, though, statewide. And it again shows a difficulty. Whoever draws the maps, you can't also ignore that there are a lot of Democrats focused in Dane and Milwaukee counties. Now, you know, you could, in theory, like make districts that go into Dane County like a pie, right? And each touch a piece of the city and go out. But other than that, I don't know how you maximize Milwaukee and Dane counties to get to a statewide map that's 50-50. Now, you can get a better one, that's for sure. This map is definitely Republican's
you
favorite.
You can, and former Senator Tim Cullen and former Senator Schultz trotted one out.
Yep, so the courts, this is huge for Democrats. They're going to have this chance, the courts to draw the maps and have a better. Now, the other caveat, 2020, if you're a Democratic donor, do you put money in the assembly in 2020 knowing the map that they had this time around didn't do anything for them? So if you're a Democrat in the assembly, do you have to go, well, I got to wait 4 years to have a shot to make a big dent? Like, what do you do as a Democrat? Now, this, 2 years is an eternity in politics.
I understand. But the takeaway is that Democratic Governor Evers is going to have to sign or veto any redistricting map passed by the Republican legislature.
And there will be a race to the courts, state and federal, to see what's going to happen.
Okay, and then falling quickly.
So Paul Ryan raised records amounts of money. He ran through the finish line. He campaigned across the country, and they lost the majority. And what was his reward from Donald Trump? It's not my fault. It's Paul Ryan's.
Right.
This shows you that, I mean, we had a little dust up last week, right, with the whole thing about the birthright citizenship thing and Ryan saying you can't do it by executive order. This shows you that President Trump is not like being challenged by anybody. And when you do, he takes it personally and is going to swing back. And that Paul Ryan walks away with what kind of legacy? To Republicans, he's the ideas guy who passed the tax cuts. To the Democrats, he's a guy who passed 3 or 4 bills in his career and exploded the deficit with those tax cuts.
We'll see where he lands.
Yeah.
But what a week. 2.67 million voters, which was a record for a midterm, a record number of absentee ballots. What a week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for November 9th. You and I, it's been so, thank you, November 9th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.